It's Thursday, June 11th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 151 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 8 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
My name is John.
And my name is Chris.
Power 16-2 is still rolling on. The first week of voting's come to a close, and I'll give you those results in a second.
It's not voting. It's intense combat. Deciding the fate of who will win this awesome competition.
That's correct. I'm sorry, I really should not have just taking this down to voting. Yeah,
what is this, American Idol? It's disgusting.
You are shaping the fate of gaming forever.
Forever.
Forever, at least until the Power 16-3.
Yeah.
So forever for a year.
Mm-hmm. And we are not giving our picks. As hosts, we have voted, and privately, but we are not
going
to influence.
We made brackets and bet our houses on them, but you don't get to know what we put.
I changed the shape of gaming sticker. It's shaped like the I voted sticker, but it says I changed the shape of gaming.
That is change I can believe in.
So let me give you guys how the first set of brackets went, and then I'm going to tell you what's up for this week. If you did not vote on the last one, be sure to get out there now. Go out to the website. There's a link to the Power 16-2, both in the top menu bar and in the show notes. So be sure to get out there and do what you need to do to help wreck gaming for America and the world, not just America. We have Australia, Europe, Israel, wherever you are.
I would also recommend checking out the forums. We have a bracketology thread going on, and it has pictures. It's awesome.
So here's how the first one went. Baron Von Badass versus Earthshaker. The winner is the Baron, 62% to 38%.
So, oh, wait, before you read these off, we got to predict who we think won, and then you have to say.
I bet you Earthshaker didn't win.
I concur with Pat.
I bet you the guy that won the last tournament beat up a crappy module everyone hates.
Okay, now you can read the result, Dan.
Okay, well, 62% to 38%. Baron Von Badass wins.
But I backed the wrong guy.
Fine, I'll let you guys...
I ran him twice, man. How do you think I feel?
I'll let you guys guess the next one, then. Bill Cosby versus BJ's Liquor Store.
Cosby.
I would say Cos, yes.
I'm going to go with BJ.
Bill Cosby, 54. Actually, sorry, this is 55 to 45. These don't work out quite to 100% because it's rounding, so 55 to 45.
Wow.
Incidentally, the Bill Cosby commencement address at, I believe, Carnegie Mellon was a featured video on YouTube, and I watched it again. It's about nerds. It's very heartwarming.
Nice.
Hmm.
Fytor versus Fatbeard. This is like a man punching himself in the face, in my opinion. Fytor versus Fatbeard.
I think that Fytor is going to win because, like you said, it's a man punching himself in the face, except Fytor actually has weapons and armor, and Fatbeard just has bad breath.
That's a strong argument, but I'm going with Fatbeard on this one. Just because Fatbeards create Fytor.
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
Whoever wins is going to get annihilated by his round two opponent, so who gives a crap?
I go with Fytor.
It is Fytor, 64% to 40%. All right, last one. Belisera versus FTB's official furry.
I can't say because I saw the results in this one.
Dude, you saw the results
on Belisera.
But I have forgotten the past two.
Belisera, hands down. Skewered on the tip of a unicorn is the Fear of the Boot Fury.
I'm torn by this one. I really am.
Because I saw it.
I'm torn. I'm going to go with the FTB furry.
Chris talks about being on the tip of a unicorn, and you talk about being torn. That works on so many levels.
And we're talking
Pat
about
and I think
furry.
A lot of like we're together.
All right,
that's true.
The FTB furry won 64 to 36%.
Oh my
nice.
Gosh!
Congratulations.
All right,
he
round
annihilated
two
annihilated those little.
Well,
parties.
Actually, it's not round two. This is really round one for the Denny's League. We need to get them sorted out. Mm-hmm. So, what you're going to be voting on this week is Batman versus the Battlemaster, Unicron versus Capital Ships.
Huh.
In the ultimate pairing of good versus evil, the angel versus the demon, the Dark Lord of Denny's himself, the sponsor of the league, versus the matron saint, Julie Hussey.
Oh, we all know who's going to win that one.
You know, I can't say anything about that one. Go get him, baby. Go get him.
And then the two I really couldn't figure out what to do with, the Plot Wagon versus that A-list celebrity, Stanley L. Jackson.
That's right. Do you know somebody tried to correct us on the forum?
Yeah, I saw that.
That's so awesome.
And I responded. It caused me to post.
Yeah, that's right. You did post today. This is a red letter day.
Right. Congratulations.
I did.
We are talking about the A-list celebrity from all of the Mockbuster movies out there, like Snakes on a Train.
Transmorphers.
Couldn't you just jump off the train?
I'm not sure how we're going to get the results out from week to week, because this week we're actually recording right before the release date, but normally we record a week ahead, so I'm not going to have the results. So if you want to keep up with the results, we'll mention them in the shows, but if you really want to stay on top of them, just keep checking the Power 16-2 page on the website, because I'll keep updating the brackets there as rounds end. So that's the place you're going to want to keep going to stay on top of who's winning and who's losing. So I got a Wii Fit about 2 months ago.
Congratulations. You know they're coming out with Wii Fit 2. Not a new board, but
yeah,
the
better game, which has
the stuff you asked for.
Well, yeah, and I'm kind of annoyed by that, because I watched some of the E3 announcements. I caught Microsoft's, I caught Nintendo's, I did not catch Sony's, but I was a little annoyed by Nintendo's announcement of Wii Fit Plus, because all it has in it is the common sense stuff that everyone who has touched this game in my presence has been like, it should have A, B, and C. For example, the ability to queue up exercises so you don't have to keep picking up the remote.
Because, you know, when you're exercising, that's just way too much effort to pick up
the
remote.
It's really annoying.
You know, you'd be shocked at how many people go in to lift weights and won't put them back on the machine.
As someone who's been using the Wii Fit, actually pretty heavily, it's really annoying because you want to do like 10 exercises in a row. And you do one, and then it's done. And then you have to go find the remote, pick it up.
Or hold it.
Which, for some exercises, you can't. Like, if you're doing push-ups, you can't be holding it.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And so then you have to go through the menus, find the next one, get the stupid trainer to say, yes, I'm ready to start, then put it back down, get back on the board, let it readjust itself, let it warn you again that you might fall, and then do the next exercise. And so what should be a 30-minute workout suddenly takes an hour to do because you spend so much time jacking around with menus.
My favorite part is still when you and I are doing it on your profile, and you do your thing, and then I get on there, and they're like, you seem to have added some weight. It's like, well, no, it's like 200 pounds of weight.
What's funny is if you get on it, it's starting up and it wants to check your weight and check your balance that you started on exercise, and it started, but you're not on it yet. And then you step on it, it goes, oh.
It says one at a time.
Yeah. I don't use it every day, and actually I haven't used it for a while. But the thing is, it's so belligerent to you. It's like, oh, I see that you didn't exercise yesterday. I guess you had something else to do. It's got freaking attitude. I'm like,
it does.
You want to throw something at the television?
It's like I haven't seen you in 4 days.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, that's about the last thing that somebody who's trying to make an effort to lose weight needs is a machine that mocks them when they get on there. Nothing's gonna fill you with more confidence.
Somebody needs to release Arlie Ermy mod. That'll get you in shape real quick.
So, John, you're saying that thing someone needs to do to lose weight is the machine to call them a fatty.
Yeah.
And start, take the donut
What's
out of your mouth
excuse,
and start
fat
jogging.
Buddy? You know, you've all seen the movie. No one can do an imitation, so I'll just leave it to him.
So as I'm watching E3, though, so I got the Wii Fit. I've actually really been enjoying it. It, believe it or not, this thing really can. If you're the type of person like me where you want to get in shape, you want to do some exercises, but you don't like things like bugs and outside, then this
you can
really
go to inside gyms.
This thing
That's
really
I
can. I mean, kick your ass in a workout.
You just eat donuts all the time, like Pat does. And
that's true.
I love donuts.
You do. You know like what? Cake. You're talking about video games, and I mentioned this at dinner for these guys, but I just have to vent my rage, especially since we talked about this a couple weeks ago. I have just been totally screwed by a video game. I bought
again.
I bought Red Faction Guerrilla for the Xbox, and I had never played any of the Red Faction games before, so I wasn't. I really didn't know.
The first
much
one
about
on PS2 was unremarkable, but you know it was the one PS2 shooter for a while, so
yeah.
I had it.
So and yeah, I never played any of the others. Never even really heard about them very much. I knew that you could like kind of blow through rocks or whatever Something
that
like
was
that.
The advertising point of the original one. The terrain was blow upable.
Well, I download a lot of demos on Live because a lot of games kind of suck but have like one unique feature of gameplay that makes them interesting. Well, you play a demo, you play that feature, you play it for 5 minutes, and you get your fill of it. You don't need to spend any money. So I love demos on Xbox. Well, I download the demo for Red Faction Guerrilla. And I loved it. I really enjoyed the game. I was stomping through this town in a big mech, destroying everything. It was really cool. So I saw the game came out, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to go pick this up. Dropped $60 on this game. Get home, start playing. I'm having a great time. It locks my Xbox. Like, total lockup. And I'm like, oh, well, that sucks. Do it again. My Xbox locks up on this game every 5 to 30 minutes of play. Like, the controller can be vibrating, and then the controller, it locks up, and I can't even, like, press the button to turn the machine. I have to go over and press the button, and the controller's still vibrating. You know, I hand it to Dawn and don't see her for 20 minutes, but, you know, whatever.
My.
So maybe somebody's getting something out of this.
You don't see her that night.
And it was $60 well spent.
Yeah, that's what she says. But
she told me it was her favorite freaking game.
Did you know that you know how they have that indie Xbox Live games, like non-professional developers can make these games and stuff
XMA
on Xbox
and all that.
Yeah, XMA and all that sort of stuff. Do you know the highest selling games on there are the vibrator controls? It's not a video game. You just set the vibration pulsing and different speeds and stuff on your controller. And you just have it goes and goes and goes, and you set timers and stuff on them.
Oh, my.
Controller massagers.
That honestly does not surprise me at all.
You know, it doesn't surprise me.
We giggle, but the ladies need loving, too. And, sometimes it's just...
Okay. Yeah, that's the thing. Ladies need loving, and if they honestly expect their video game playing, boyfriends or husbands to supply that in the proper way, shape, and form, odds are it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, but what surprised me about those, everybody knows that the best ones are the ones that plug into the wall anyway. So.
Wow.
Wait, what?
Wait, where are we going?
All right, I thought it was the ones that were gasoline-powered with pull starts.
So why don't we get back to where I was going with this, which is, so as I'm watching E3, all right, because obviously what the Wii did was it broke that fourth wall of gaming, that on some level you're involved in the games. And of course, they had that originally with the Wii Remote. And now with Wii Fit and all this other stuff, where instead of swinging a sword by hitting A, you actually swing your arms to swing the sword. Well, now Microsoft and Sony are kind of following on that bandwagon. Microsoft has that whole Project Natal, which is spelled Natal, but is pronounced Natal, I guess, because Project Natal just sounds stupid. And Sony, I don't know the details because I missed their announcement, but they've apparently said
nobody has a PS3
anyway. Yeah, nobody has a PS3 anyway.
I did see the demo on that. It's pretty sweet.
They're apparently doing some kind of motion-based control. And if you haven't seen the Project Natal thing and watched the whole, like, Milo demo and all that, I might link it in the show notes. It's interesting stuff. I have a great deal of skepticism about whether or how soon this will translate into a real gaming experience in your living room. But what I wanted to get your guys' take on is it looks like the current fad in video gaming is to put down the controller. You play out the game
to get off the couch and take a walk outside, Fatty? Is that what you're saying?
That's part of it. But that you are now interacting with the game. That the game is kind of, instead of a screen, it's now almost like a stage for what you're doing. And I'm curious what you guys think of that trend.
Well, I think that there are extremes in everything. And I saw an E3 demo where I think it was Will Wright, one of the crazy video game guys, right?
Yeah, not Richard Garriott crazy.
Yeah, not Richard Garriott crazy, but Will Wright crazy, because it was Will Wright. And I forget the name of the game, but basically it's not really a game.
Spore?
No. I said not really a game, not a travesty. So what it is...
Dead Sea Scrolls Revealed. I see it.
It's basically...
Yeah, that's not a game.
It's basically a game where there's a person. There's this little boy. And it's one of those virtual human things, and you interact with him and whatnot, and he learns from you, and you talk to him and stuff, and you can have this almost Turing test conversation with this artificial intelligence.
Are you talking about the little kid who's sitting on the dock with the fish?
Yes.
That's Milo.
Milo, that's it. It does look academically really, really interesting. Not a game that I would want to play, but I mean, they had stuff like, he'll throw you something, you use the motion sensor technology to catch what the character of Milo throws you, and the way they have it angled on the screen, that it kind of like tricks your eye into thinking, you know, you think it's coming towards you, and they use all these different techniques to basically trick your mind, like how your mind interacts with the world, into thinking it's as real as possible. Put down the controller and you're really interacting with the game. And that was kind of, I think, Will Wright's point, was that, you know, yeah, you're really interacting with the game, and you really, it's breaking down that wall between reality and game and stuff. But that's one of those things, I think that's too much of, I don't think it's a bad thing. I just think it's kind of a not very fun after a while thing.
I like it. You know, obviously the Wii was innovative in the fact that it was the beginning of this different way of playing a game. And I just have to say, I am fully in support of anything that goes down the road of me getting my own holodeck. So when I can build my room with a holodeck and I can play games that way, that's going to be the ultimate.
I don't want a holodeck for one reason.
Oh, I want a holodeck for
because
many reasons.
Because the safety cell function 99% of the time.
I would never leave it.
Exactly.
I mean, if I had a holodeck where I could make any reality I wanted, I would never leave it. And yeah. I don't think most people would.
Yeah.
I think
There's a movie coming out like that. It's a Bruce Willis movie. I forget what it's called.
Surrogate. It's kind of like that.
Kind of like that.
They don't make a holodeck. They make robots they can live through and see through and everything.
So they basically plug themselves in, VR goggles and all this, and they go into this cocoon-like thing or this chair, and they're in the safety of their completely locked-down house, and they have these androids that look exactly like them, only younger, handsomer, and more or less invincible. You know, they're robots, so if they get shot, who cares, type thing. And the guy's a cop. Well, everybody uses these surrogate robots, and everybody's like plugged in and stuff, and the robots are going around living your day-to-day life. You're controlling them, and I'm sure that there's some other motivation besides safety that you do this. You know, it's like some VR thing or game, whatever. Well, anyway, he's a cop, and one of the scenes they show is that there's this big firefight, and his surrogate gets blasted by some bullets and it gets hit by a car, and of course he's perfectly safe. He can do all these dangerous cop stuff while he's perfectly safe, and everybody on the planet lives like this. And something happens in the movie where he has to unplug himself and he can't operate a robot anymore, and he has to go out, and it's a mystery and stuff, and it looks really cool.
Well,
although that's kind of a tangent,
right? I gotta say that the cool thing about all this stuff like Natal and the Wii and whatever is it's expanding the demographic of gamers. If you look at the Wii, there are people that have never touched video games in their lives that are playing the Wii. I mean, it's all jokes aside. It's a very popular system in places like nursing homes. You know, my parents who are not nursing home age.
That's the vibration function.
My parents who are not nursing home age by any stretch of the imagination, but they play the Wii, and they've never been into video games.
Right. In fact, they've been quite anti-video games.
My 76-year-old father, recently, he got a Wii for his birthday, and Wii and Wii Fit for Christmas.
You can't argue with the exercise.
No.
You do get up, you get involved, and certainly I think it is cool on many levels. And with Natal, they have a lot of things that aren't actually demos. It's more mock-ups of what they're trying to do, where like you'd walk past the screen and it would recognize you and it would actually spar with you on the spot, where instead of playing Street Fighter where
you don't have controls in your hand.
Yeah, you swing your right hand to punch and you're not even holding a controller. It's just tracking your body motions. Mm-hmm. I've got to say, it's some pretty cool stuff. And I've got some reservations, but
when they, using the Project Natal, when they make that to create group play games, either whether it's Halo, whether it's D&D, or some other fantasy game where you can actually roam around with a group and doing those kinds of things, that's when they'll have, you know, true success with that kind of stuff. When they can make a virtual representation of what True Dungeon would be at Gen Con.
I have to agree, that would be badass for role-playing games.
Huge. It'd be huge for role-playing games.
I say, yeah, because you could have that direct interaction with really good sets and costumes. It'd be like LARPing suddenly worthwhile.
I don't know about that. I mean, I agree with you guys in concept, but every time there's an E3, there's a new system out or a new video game concept or a new something like that, or a new interconnectivity of role players or a new technology like Google Wave or something, the whole role-playing community always gets on this bandwagon of saying, this is going to be so great for role-playing. And it's like every technology that comes out, it's like, yeah, I can see the argument in that, but you know what? I've lived through life. And I have yet to see any of these technologies that are really good for role playing.
My first electric pencil sharpener has radically changed my role playing experience.
It has. Well, and we could paint in broad brushes. Podcasting has been great for role playing, and forums and play by post and email and stuff. And sure, that
graphs
all simple stuff, but
boof from sixth grade math and science class were awesome for my DMing.
But Neverwinter Nights didn't really help role playing. And there's been other stuff too, like, oh, the Wii is coming out and it's got the motion controls. It's going to be great for role-playing games. There's no role-playing games for the Wii, whether it's with people or by yourself. I mean, there's no good ones.
Well, I also came up with a couple other things that make me skeptical of this.
Mm-hmm.
The first is particularly with Natal. They always make these big promises and then never find any really good way to apply them. Because once you actually get into the nuts and bolts of making a functional game that's worth playing, where that kind of involvement really fits into it, I think it's going to be a long road there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first time that it misidentifies you, or it identifies something you didn't intend it to identify, like you scratch your butt, that's translating that into the game, or suddenly the system pops on and a priest appears and scolds you or whatever. But the other thing, this is something Tex was pointing out when I was talking to him, was that there's a hardware budget issue. That when you make a game, you set these budgets for, we are going to put aside so much memory and so much processing power for each aspect of the game.
Yeah.
Well, if you have to process all this motion sensing stuff, that's taking away from whatever else the game could be doing. Now, the Wii already does this, but the Wii was built with that in mind, even though the Wii actually has a really crappy processor. And if you think about it, there's quite a leap from the Wii's accelerometer to the full body recognition of Natal. I mean, there's a massive...
Well, the graphical capabilities of a Wii, which is basically a GameCube, going all the way up to Milo. I mean, if you've seen that tech demo, these graphics are gorgeous.
Yeah, and I'll link it in the show notes since we keep referring to it. But the other thing that would worry me is a lot of times these game developers get some new technology and it becomes this obsession, it becomes a square peg. They're going to pound into every round hole they find. Well, the DS does this all the time. Yeah. You're playing a game and they're going to make you use that stylus, whether it makes any sense or not, just because it's there.
Well, the same thing's happening with the Wii and the DS. It's like a good DS and a good Wii game are ones that integrate the controls, whereas a bad DS and a bad Wii game are ones where it forces you to use the different kind of control scheme because it's there and for no other reason.
No matter how unintuitive it is, it's there, so you have to use
it. Like we said, on the other hand, there are some really great games that integrate those functionality into it because it's more of a part of it. It's more intuitive and a logical extension of the game.
Twilight Princess, I'll give as a great example. Mm-hmm. I think Twilight Princess was a huge success of integrating your actions with gameplay in a very, very intuitive, fun way.
I think, even though it wasn't made for the Wii, I think Okame, if anybody's ever played that game, and if you haven't, you are missing out, is a perfect game that is just perfect for the Wii. You play this goddess wolf, and you paint your powers, and it's about art and stuff, and you paint color into the world and that sort of thing. And it was for the GameCube, I think. And you use the controllers. Well, they came out with the Wii and they're like, this game is made for the Wii. So you can actually use the stylus, or not the stylus, the wand or whatever they call it, to actually paint everything on there, draw the characters that activate the powers and paint onto the trees and that sort of thing. Okame, check it out. You're missing out if you haven't played it. Totally. Have you played it, Pat?
I have not.
Stop doing this podcast. Go out and play it.
See you guys.
All right. Pat's out.
Bye, Pat.
Chad and John.
Yo.
Mm-hmm.
I've got you guys on the mics together at long last, even though you were both here for the last episode. But I didn't know for sure John was going to be here for the last episode, so I didn't have this planned out, but I do this time.
I'm putting us on the spot, John.
I am putting you on the spot big time here.
Yep.
What do I want to talk about today for
I say we just talk about World War II.
All right. We won.
What I want to talk about for the RPG topic is something that's near and dear to your heart, and I'm going to kind of, I don't know, quiz you guys on. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make you...
Oh, is this the failure episode? Oh, wow. Okay.
Failure. All right, let me set the topic up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to give you guys the platform. And I've got some talking points here, but I'm largely going to give you the platform.
All we have to say on this topic is that we built the nukes and we won.
To flesh this out. That was success, not failure.
Oh.
It's human nature to want to succeed. I mean, nobody wakes up in the morning hoping they're going to fail. We do it in jobs, relationships, sports, video games, everything in our life. We want to succeed. But you two have been positing for a very, very long time that you actually enjoy failure in role-playing games.
Intensely. Well,
John is sort of a masochist, but I enjoy reality, or bringing as much reality into a role-playing game, even games that aren't real in any way, shape, or like a high fantasy game. And I think that failure is a very real part of life.
I like dying because it adds spice and verisimilitude, and no one else does it.
That's right.
John, would you agree with Chad's characterization of your gaming experience as almost masochistic? I mean, without the psychological connotations there.
I don't know. I'm working toward my own end. I consider it the greatest victory of all when people stand up at the end and say, your massive coronary that killed your character of 3 years was awesome. Or the fact that your lieutenant just columbined a military base and got turned into Swiss cheese in the process was amazing. This is how I win.
Yeah.
I'm a whore for approval.
Role-playing games are about cool scenes.
Explain what you mean by that.
Cool scenes are times when cool things happen. You slay the dragon, you save the maiden, you get the magical sword, you achieve your ends, you...
One character finally gets through to another and redeems him from his evil path.
And those are all really positive, cool scenes. Who is to say that there can't be really negative, cool scenes? A death. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a heroic death. It could be a really pathetic, sad death. But it was very cool in how it worked out. It was very interesting how the character played out and interacted with the other characters and how this came about where the character died in a sort of sad way.
I don't know if I would call a really stupid, pathetic death worth the time. I mean, if you trip into a bucket and break your head off.
Well, something random. I think when things become random and pointless, they are, well, random and pointless.
Basically, I do three kinds of deaths. One, the character is killed by his own excesses.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when tripping into a bucket makes sense, if you're just a bucket tripper and that's your flaw or whatever. I find it satisfying to be the one guy at the table who actually has a serious, debilitating, crippling character flaw, while everyone else around me took -2 dex so they could take +2 strength.
Mm-hmm.
Two is, of course, the betrayal. There's nothing more fun than that one sit-down game session when everyone's trying to kill me, and then eventually they do. I've done this 100 times.
Yeah. What better way to do the trope of the enemy from within?
That's right.
Than to have one of your players
actually
be that enemy
do it. And accept the fact that he's going to get his head blown off.
Otherwise, I mean, in a lot of role-playing games, it's just, you know, it could be the end of the world and your characters are standing against the apocalypse, or you could be saving a dragon, or you could be facing an enemy armada, or you could be trying to kill vampires in your town. But no matter what the game, does the group always have to be happy time fun friends that hold hands?
The third one is the traditional textbook heroic death, going down to save everybody else. That's fun.
Yeah, that's always fun, too.
Let me ask you guys a couple questions.
And by you guys, you mean the people who don't speak.
Yeah.
And
Some of these are going to be more geared towards Chad and John, but some of these are not. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, this first one's not. So, Pat or Chris, feel free to chime in here. Why do you think most people don't like failing in an RPG?
Because most people don't like failure.
Still internally trying to define, well, what you're terming as failure, because I kind of agree with Chad's initial point right at the outset. If the good scene is, you know, a character dying, say, whether it's a sacrificial death or even if it's betrayal, is that really negative?
Okay, well, hold on then.
Yeah, I don't see it failure that way. I mean, I don't know you don't mean it this way, Dan, but I think some people take it this way. It's like sitting down and saying, oh, well, why did Boromir die? Tolkien sucks. Why couldn't he make him win? You have
oh my God, Boromir was awesome.
I know.
Okay, well, then, just to help...
That stupid horn.
Set the boundaries.
Such a nut.
Just to help set the boundaries of the discussion, let me give you guys some examples of failure, okay? Mm-hmm. These are the various kinds of failures we are talking about. And I realize that the...
Let me give you an example of failure that involved one of your characters.
Okay.
Well, this is what I mean by it was a cool scene. It was a negative thing that happened.
Okay.
That was the cool scene, thus made for a positive experience, at least in my view. The game turned out to be a flop, but it was the Cyberpunk game that we were running. It was sort of my take on Cyberpunk and my world. It wasn't based on any system. So Dan is playing an old guy, and he's like this sort of old gumshoe type detective. And you had a really rough marriage, and your business was not very successful, and you weren't one of these million-dollar street samurais, and you weren't a ninja, and you were an old guy who was an investigator, who used his brain and had a revolver and stuck to values and honor. And without getting into too many specifics, basically the group tangled with a corporation, and one of the corporation guys went to Dan's character because his character was kind of the de facto leader of this group and made him an offer he couldn't refuse. He's like, hey, this thing you got, give it to us, or, you know, stop investigating or stop playing in this area. Basically made some threats. Well, out of character, Dan wasn't really happy with his character. He wasn't really happy with kind of where it wasn't fitting into the game as well as he liked. And it was a good character, but just there wasn't a clean fit.
So yeah, it was a group template issue more than.
So I took this scene where basically it was just a threat. I wanted to introduce a bad guy. And Dan and I arranged it to where Dan's character was going to get taken out. And so a couple of the guys in the group dropped Dan off at his office, his gumshoe office that he lived in. And as they're driving away, I described this scene where in the rearview mirror, the office explodes out. And, you know, they come running back and the whole place is on fire. And of course, Dan's character is dead.
That's cool.
And it made for, you know, in the telling, it's not as exciting as it was.
Well, it's a gaming story.
Yeah, it's a gaming story. You know, I added tension and there was a lot of detail. And there's also
multiple games of investment in the characters and plot.
Reasons that we only tell gaming stories in 2 minutes so we can get the barest minimum point across.
But right. Let me give you guys some examples of failure that I jotted down. Because I don't just want to focus on character death. All right, this could be many things. Character death.
Yeah, I know, and I don't just do character
death. Character death is one possibility. It could be the loss of something or someone of great importance to the character. For example, when we gamed with a guy named Tim several years ago, he wrote a character that was very heavily centered around these kind of big brother feelings he had towards a very young sister.
And his parents died.
Yeah.
Because his parents always die.
I know. But that little sister ended up dying in the plot. He was unable to save her.
I made my first Killed by Orcs character on Dragon Realms a couple months. But I timed it out so that it was born during a massive war that its country lost. So it was like, you know what? 9 out of 10 of the kids of this generation have dead parents. So I'm getting away with it. Anyway, continue.
Okay, other examples are totally missing a major clue or plot point. The total party kill.
Mm-hmm.
Something that goes beyond just missing a major clue, but totally unrecoverably failing at the plot.
Mm-hmm.
The bad guy you were trying to catch got away on a spaceship to the moon. It was the only spaceship in the world. And I don't know, whatever. That's probably bad GMing. But this could be something done in character creation. For example, you intentionally take a weakness or disability that, John, as you said, you're not using just to min-max something else, but you're just taking on some kind of real issue within your character.
Mm-hmm.
But these are all different examples of character failure. It could even just be...
What about party failure?
It could be on the party level.
Another gaming story we have, again, that horrible Cyberpunk game that was a complete and total flop...
You guys were talking about that Cyberpunk and how awesome it was when this was just like last, what, January, February, March? Oh,
I had fun with it.
Okay. I know.
I don't know where all this flop talk came from.
Let me put it to you this way. Some people in the group had fun. Other people didn't have fun. And the people who didn't have fun decided to do
alter
things.
The deal.
Yes. And so the game ended up flopping. And there were some bruised feelings, but everybody had a big man hug and it's okay now. So anyway, the group failure, so to speak, was imagine you're a group and you're trying to accomplish a mission, or your group has goals, or there's the sort of what the plot is about, what that sort of railroad is leading to, and the group doesn't succeed. Through all of their best efforts, it just doesn't happen. It doesn't work out, and they fail. It's not a TPK, but they're trying to accomplish something. And they don't compliment. Basically, on the Cyberpunk game, I put a time limit on this thing. And they had to accomplish these goals within the time limit of like a span of a week or something like that. And they just didn't quite plan it out very well. In fact, the problem was that they were over planning it, and then they missed the deadline. And it was like, well, if I extend this deadline, I mean, that's going to be a little cheesy, you know? And so I decided to take a gamble as a game master, and I had the party fail. And they were these sort of shadow runner street samurai group. And I think that that's what ultimately killed the game. I think that of the people who were playing who weren't having fun, it's just like, well, we've never failed before. Right.
This wasn't just a little token defeat in Act 2 so that you could become a badass later.
And the thing was, they were a group of shadow runners or street samurai or whatever cyberpunk trope you want to call it. And the whole thing is, it wasn't a TPK. They failed at this mission. Get another mission. You know, get another job. Get another run. Well, get another whatever.
Let's go back then to that first question.
But yeah, I mean, it really helped kill the game.
As two people that enjoy some degree of failure in role-playing games, why is it you think that most role players do not enjoy it? Like I said, my position was at very high level, and I have a more detailed opinion. Mm-hmm. My very high level opinion is I think it's just human nature that we're wired to not want to fail. I mean, assuming you don't have some serious psychological disorder, we're wired not to want to fail at anything. Now, in the example you just gave, it sounded like, I guess the reason you were describing is perhaps the party didn't see a way forward.
Yeah.
That they felt like that failure had taken them to a dead end. Another example I give is, and I think we've mentioned this before on the show, in a Skies of Glass game played like 15 years ago in the original iteration of Skies of Glass, there was a guy that got his foot shot off. And he wanted to get rid of it as a character failure. His character's not dead. In fact, the foot actually wasn't even shot off. It was just mangled.
He had a limp and he had a slower run and dodge.
Yeah. But the point is the character had suffered some kind of a loss, which once again, this was not a min-max. There was no bonus to offset this. He'd suffered a permanent injury. And while I suppose he saw a way forward, it was not the kind of situation he wanted anymore. The situation no longer looked appetizing because now suddenly he was dragging a boat anchor.
Mm-hmm.
And well, a lot of players, as soon as their character becomes beneath what a newly generated character would be, why not throw him in the furnace?
I think that
why not get a new one?
I think Dan's original point about human nature, I think, has a lot to do with it because
yeah, I do too.
For most people's lives, there's enough bad stuff that goes on during the day, whether it's at home, whether it's, you know, at work, whatever it is. There's plenty of bad stuff going on, and you want to have something good and something right and something positive happen to you. And for most people who are facing those kinds of things, this is what they look to. They look towards this as being, you know, oh, this is so great. I get to go and kill things tonight. I had such a crappy day at work. Oh, but then their character dies. And now they had a lousy game session as well. And so their day has just turned to be, you know, complete and utter crap filler.
And it's entertainment. I mean, when you go to the movies, the good guy wins. Most of the time when you read a fantasy, sci-fi, adventure,
not always
suspense, whatever. Most
I just saw
time.
A movie called Bad Sleep Well by Akira Kurosawa, and the good guy surely not win.
There are the Schindler's Lists out there that are tear-jerkingly amazing pieces of cinema,
tragedies
in which
and stuff.
horrible things happen over and over and over again. But 9 out of 10 plus times, you walk away thinking, "All right, the bad guys got their druthers, the good guy got the good girl, and everyone's happy."
I think that with role-playing games too, you look at the nature of the role-playing game itself, not the plot or the story that the role-playing game puts forward, but look at the mechanics of the game. It is a game where you advance, you win, you get stronger, you get better. Every time you play, you get stronger, you gain experience, you get better, 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 and you don't get weaker. And if you do get weaker, like, look at the rules. What percentage of the rules is about advancing a character in your average role-playing game? And then what percentage of the rules is about actually putting in that life grinds you down sometimes? I mean, some games don't even have where your character gets weaker.
The white is the most dreaded monster in the player's handbook.
Yeah.
Because it makes you one level lower than the rest of the group.
Well, but what
which
would
is
you,
the worst of punishments.
What would you guys say, though, to Chris's point, that a lot of people come into RPGs because they want to be something bigger, bigger than life. They don't.
And let's admit it. I mean, let's get off our damn high horse. We do it too. Everyone does.
Right. Well, say in failure, they might say, I might say, okay, maybe failure's not going to add to my enjoyment, my sense of escape. Let's say I'm really into flying kites. Watching my kite go down in flames does not somehow make this more fun. How would you guys respond to that? As someone at the table...
Because we're not trying to beat your NPC dragon as an end in itself. We're using him as a prop in a story. And sometimes we like it more in the story if certain characters get whacked.
I approached it from two angles in my games. One is that if a character came to me, like your Gumshoe character and several of John's characters, and say, hey, I want to go out in this way, or I want to fail in this way, yeah, sure, I'm all for it. And then the other way I approached it is that I was the deal maker. I made deals with people saying, you know what, you want this, but you're going to have to do this, or you're going to have to take this weakness, or you're going to have to take this thing. I'm not just going to give you this really cool thing for free.
Right. And that horse trading is a mechanic we've talked about at length. But I think Dan's made a point of saying we're not talking about that. We're talking about you just take a notch because you have to.
I never forced anyone in my games to fail. I think that there are some people who are into that, and it's acceptable and it's cool either by situation or by disposition. But there are people, they come to a game because, you know what, life kicks them in the balls 6 days a week. But on that seventh day a week, they get away from all that crap, and then they can sit down game, and then they are the hero.
You, Chad, have forced other player characters to accept the consequences of their fellow player character's action to the point where they leave in a huff, take their husband with them, and destroy the game, though.
Yes.
So it's not like you just make it all rainbows and happy cloud farts.
Yeah.
How would you two handle it? If a failure happens, like you just described, that makes the game not fun.
Fun for who? I mean,
the person that it occurred to, okay, the guy who got his foot shot off, the whatever, the person that failed because of a bad choice they made or a die roll or something, maybe it's in their control, maybe it's not, but some failure has occurred. And this has made the game not fun to them. They don't like the character anymore. They don't like the plot anymore. What they were in this for is no longer there. What do you do with that?
Depends on how big of a whiner they are. I mean, it sounds pretty cold, but it really depends on how big of a whiner they are. Are they going to bitch so much that it's going to be disruption of the game? Or are they just going...
Do they have the personal capital to destroy the game if I piss them off too much?
Yeah. Or are they going to be a little upset, but they'll be fine and they'll get over it. And you know what? A couple games down the road, I'm going to throw them a bone because, you know, they took the hit, they stiff upper lipped, they went through it.
Yeah.
I'm going to reward.
Well, the flip side of the coin that I had with you, and not that I was asking for it, but whenever I asked for something, you gave it to me.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't going to try to overpower myself.
Yeah. And, you know, I was never concerned about it. Well, power levels in games is totally different.
That's a significant level of player trust between Chad and John there.
And it was earned over years. I mean, this is a relationship. It's not a...
Because John was my friend, Chris, and I trusted him.
Here we go.
Well, yeah, but see, again, Chadtopia.
That's right.
All right, Chris, go on.
You do have to do something about that person because I think, you know, and a lot of it depends on how well you know that guy. And not necessarily in a friend relationship way, but how well has he reacted to slightly negative things in the past?
Right.
It might give you a gauge on what he's going to do from this point forward. And yeah, you do have to do something, whether it's taking him aside and saying, look, you either got to get over this or we got to make a new character or something, but or leave. But you can't be...
It gets back to knowing your player.
Yeah, it gets back to knowing your players. I mean, you're trying to make this fun for everybody. And if you're a game master, you want to throw some failure into the mix, and a lot of your group, no one in your group really likes failure, then possibly you need to think of either framing it differently or maybe not putting in that failure.
Maybe you should be a PC.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of the solution I came to with most of the gaming I've done with most of the people at this table. I never game with Pat. But
Dan, I demand you, the next point you bring up, I demand that you make Pat answer it.
Okay, I will do.
Hey, you know what? I'll break in there and just say this. I've been listening. It's been about you two. You've had some points. I actually do have a point that I wanted to
bring
talk
it up.
About.
I know when that happened,
I didn't want to bust in on it. You had
your
thing.
You're pointing at me. This is for the boot, man. We're bastards.
So this is something that you guys have both sort of touched on a little bit. It's just sort of been, it's been eating at me a little bit.
Okay.
Dude, I am so excited right now.
I know. It's
essentially what you've described in my mind, it boils down to player character suicide. Because like you've talked about, and I've seen it. Well, and what I mean is this, like you say, you decide you don't want to go this direction with this character. So you sat down with the GM beforehand and said, okay, this is how I want my character to go out. Personally, well, I guess what I'm, what I have a problem with in that is it is like it's suicide in the fact that instead of role playing at the table and your character dies because of what happens during the game, it's premeditated and you say boom, boom, boom.
Well, brokered exchange is a little too.
I think it goes beyond. I think it is. I think if it happens at the game, if it happens in the story, it's cool. But doing it like that to me is just like it is. It's like suicide. It's like, well, there's.
I mean, it's predetermined. It's a safeguard. Chad, you feel 100% better about killing my latest guy when I came to you 10 minutes ago and said, you know, it'd be okay if he died right now.
Yeah.
Well, why not just have him? Why does he have to die, per se? It's like, if you don't want to play the character, just...
But it's not just that.
Well, hold on, though.
I don't want him to just poop because I want a new character.
Well, I mean, but
it's the end of a 10-game plot arc, and now it's time for him to...
Yeah.
Well, but here's
try to fly off of a 10th-floor
balcony. Here's the question I want to throw out there, based on what Pat said, which is, what is the difference to you guys between failure by design versus failure by fate? Because what you guys are largely describing...
Failure by design.
Is a failure by design.
Yeah, that's
a good I want to go out in a big blaze of glory because I want to switch characters or because I enjoy that style of
role-playing.
This is
almost part of like a group template. Versus... Like death template.
You're talking... I mean, because we keep talking about death.
Versus...
We keep hitting on death because death is the extreme example, but I just want people to know we are not equating failure with character death. Right. I mean, it could be anything.
So let's take a different example. Let's say that you're playing a guy and... He's an officer in the army, and you've already decided, you've done your failure by design, that he's going to have this weakness, and 10 games in, he's going to betray the party and die. But
we played that Battletech game.
But what happens instead is the second game in, bad dice roll, and you fail a negotiation check, get stripped of your rank, you're not in the army anymore, and in fact, you're in the brig, which means you can't betray anyone and you can't die the way you wanted
then
to.
Then react, dumbass. And it's a game. If I wanted to control everything, I'd open up a Word document.
Exactly. Exactly, John. And that's why the whole failure by design thing kind of gives me the creeps. I'm kind of with Pat. I don't like that because I think that it does put a pre-described ending on things that shouldn't have pre-described necessarily.
Well, Chad and I don't really pre-describe much, if at all. I mean, we basically say... The fall is now. I'm ready. You're a good GM. You could do this on 5 minutes of notice. Go.
Yeah.
And then we act it out. And I don't know where it's going.
Yeah. And
I think, though, you're still...
We are still colluding. I mean, if this is a poker table, we get thrown out.
You have decided, okay, this character, I'm done with it. I want him to die so I can play a new character, as opposed to, you know what, he retires or he gets reassigned and I'm just not playing him anymore so I can play another character. It has to be very... You seem like it has to be absolute for you. There has to be the finality of it. I don't think would you ever do that? Would you ever say you're done with a character? Would you be fine with them not dying to play another character?
Since it's just out
there. If he was
have
resolved.
You done it?
Have I done it?
Like, if you have a character, it's just retire.
Yeah,
happily.
Or just, you know, I'm done with this character.
I'm trying to.
He's not retiring, but you know, I don't want to play him anymore.
I'm
but he's
trying
just
to
out
think
there.
Of a campaign in which I switch characters mid game, and I didn't kill the one I started on.
Well, another thing you guys have to remember about like how I run a game is that I want as much player interaction with the plot as possible, both in-game and out-of-game. Mm-hmm. I want the players to help me shape the plot. I want to know what they want, where they want the story to go. Not the details, not the spoilers and that sort of thing. But
I did it once. Chad, finish up, I'll tell you.
Like I said, I want the players to tell the story as much as I do. I want players to play NPCs. I want players to come up with ideas and come up with things that I can integrate in. And I'm not just saying they write a background that's 3 pages long and I pick out all the tropes that I want and all the NPCs out of the background. And I put them in the story and that's it. That's the only other interaction they have with the story is them in character interacting through their PCs. No, I want more than that as a GM out of my players. I want the players to come to me and I want them to talk about the game. I love listening to my players after a game talking about what they think is going to happen next and what they want to see and what they're excited mm-hmm. about. And I listen to that and I'm taking mental notes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking that. That's what I want. And then I've had players come to me and say, we interacted with this cult priest like this and he was doing this. And I don't know where you're going with that, but wouldn't it be cool if this happened? I'm thinking this, I'm thinking that. And then I'm like, you know, that is a good idea. How can I take that, change it enough to where it isn't just a verbatim thing, because, you know, there wouldn't be any suspense, there wouldn't be a surprise, there wouldn't be any mystery. But, you know, like I said, I want to work with the players to create the stories. I just don't want them to be this sanitized IC role-playing that they're players and they're characters in my story. I want it to be everybody's story. I know I'm some dirty role-playing game hippie when I talk about this, but I do. I want it to be a collaborative story.
I think most of the games I've played with GMs that have been like that.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of interaction. I think you probably do it maybe a little bit more so, or you go a little bit beyond maybe than what I've done in the past, but yeah, we're on the same page there.
I think it makes us all warm and happy inside at the end of the game when players talk about it for an hour instead of grunting and leaving.
Well, true.
That's confirmation that we did something right when we had the GM screen. Yeah.
John, let me pitch it to you in a way.
Oh, let me tell my story now.
All right, go ahead and tell your story.
I had a Celestian arms merchant join up with a mob of ne'er-do-wells and smugglers and such in a Star Wars D20 game. I thought the group was way too damn big. It was like one GM and 12 players.
Ugh.
It was on Friday night in my sophomore year of college, and I was just like, you know, this game is too much. I got other stuff going on. And so 2 months into the game, he just retired. He went back to strike his luck in business again.
Mm-hmm.
He got bought out by the Empire. I don't remember the backstory, but he just said, I'm going back to polishing pistols. Fighting clone troopers and droids is too much.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway,
and then the GM was able to integrate that.
Yeah, and I left. I've seen like one of those people since.
As I was sitting here listening to this and thinking about particularly that failure by design versus failure by fate, I think I may have come up with a way where I can make this more relevant to you.
Okay.
Which is this.
Bam.
Failing at failure. Okay. Most people come into a role playing game wanting to succeed, and so when they fail, it upsets them. If you come into a role-playing game and say...
The suicidal guy who forgot the bullets?
Or you say, 10 games in, or I want to go out in a blaze of glory. And that moment when the enemy...
You ride in front of the Indians to die, and then you live, and you took all these bullets, and you're a hero now?
Yes, exactly.
Dances with Wolves, or was it Confederates? I don't remember what it
failed,
was.
You failed at failure, or the enemy super soldier's released, and some guy in your party lands the triple critical and kills him. And... you're fine.
What would you have done in all the games that we played together where, you know, you said, okay, now is the time when this character self-destructs, Chad, run for this. Is, you know what I want. You know what I like.
What would I have done if I had won?
And then I would say, I would play it out, and but I would spin it to where you didn't actually die.
You failed. You didn't fail.
Yeah. You succeeded.
If the lieutenant scared the rest of the platoon back under his command, I would have took it back in.
Yeah.
And I would have probably been a crazy asshole from there on until my other character death.
It seems to me,
Cyberdyne systems had got his microchip, I would have blown up the world and ruled over a smoldering husk. That would have ended the game. I mean, that's another point to make. When it's, I'm going to kill everyone or die, and you don't die, you've killed everyone, and the game is over.
There's sort of, we talked about like the enemy from within and the betrayal thing.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that's really cool. It doesn't need to happen in every game. In fact, it should be a very rare thing. And I love it when it does happen, it works. And I think that every time it should end the same, the asshole dies.
Yep, my asshole dies every time.
The players win. I think that there should only be one success and one failure in that.
You can take down a player with you, maybe. But then again, they leave in the huff.
Yeah.
I killed John. Roll dice. No, you missed. John just killed you. F you, I quit.
Yeah.
Okay.
It strikes me
a couple of those.
That when that happens, when somebody fails and gets in a huff about it, there are three ways you can deal with it. Two are extremes, one's in the middle.
Don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out?
That's extreme number one.
It didn't happen. You won.
That's extreme number two. It's the one far extreme is you tell them, sit down, shut up.
Failure experts, John.
Tough it out. Extreme option number two is you roll back the event. You say,
Chad and
okay,
I both do option number one every time.
I realize that this is kind of upsetting you for whatever reason. We'll give you a do-over. And some games may even have a built-in mechanic for that, but most don't. And the middle one...
Because in most games, you're supposed to succeed all the time. Well, why would they need that mechanic?
The middle one is you try to encourage them, maybe throw them a more immediate bone, but you keep the event. You pull them aside and say, okay, I realize your foot got mangled and you don't like that, and that's made the character unplayable in your mind. But you know what? It's just part of the game. Tough it out. And I promise that within the next, you know, game or two or three, that XYZ you've really been wanting, or this place you've really been wanting to go to, or this NPC you really wanted to interact with will come around, and we'll do other things right. to keep the character workable for you. You know, you kind of strike a deal on the...
I've always extolled, and John and I have had this conversation many times, actually, is I believe in a carrot and stick philosophy of GMing. I believe that when you want your players to do something, you can apply a little bit of the stick and, you know, kind of smack them, kind of spank them and punish them. But you can also provide them with the carrot. You can say, well, you know, there's this little thing that you really want, be it a plot advancement, be it a character advancement. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's all about achieving the right balance with that.
And in answer to your original question, Dan, because I don't think I actually did, I would take it as an interesting new roleplay challenge if I failed to fail. Like, if I had gone on my descent into hell, danced with the devil, and won, I don't know if I've ever done that, but I think it would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Let me close this one out. And we actually have some loose ends, some kind of tangent topics here that I'm going to save for the next episode, which actually work out pretty well because we had some loose ends from 150 as well.
And I have a question to ask both Pat and Chris and possibly
okay,
you.
Well, we'll get to that in a second here. But then we can use 152 as kind of a mop-up episode for 150 and 151. So, Chad, go and ask your question, okay. And then we'll close out on mine here in a second.
This really isn't to John because I kind of know John's heart in this. But after hearing John and I's arguments and our beliefs, because both Pat and you, Chris, were kind of silent on this, and Dan, you were busy moderating. After hearing this, what is your guys' opinion now on character failure? Is it something that you would want to happen to your characters? Is it something you support? Or maybe you still are of the opinion that it's too contrived and you're just not going to allow that. If you could elaborate on that.
Sure. As far as failure goes, and it's not what my opinion is now, because I don't, listening to you guys didn't change my mind. I mean, I just didn't interject it at the time because you guys were busy. But anyway,
busy talking.
As far as what I think about failure, I like, I guess, the smaller bits of failure. Like you said, like, say you fail a role or you just don't quite, maybe you miss a plot point or something like that. The minor things, I enjoy those just because it's somewhat of a role-playing challenge because, yeah, something bad happened. You have to react to it and you have to figure out a way around it.
You know,
this sort of a thing. When it gets to the bigger things like, say, player death, I don't like it. I mean, I've experienced player death in some campaigns that we've had. The ones that we've experienced, though, were never contrived or they were never pre-planned. Mm-hmm. It was, this is what happened. This is the roll of the dice. This was the fate and the character died and they were cool. I mean, it was one of those, like you said, it was a cool scene. It was a moving scene because, wow, okay, one of the player characters just died. You know, it was pretty, emotional.
I think that matter what happens as a GM, whether it's by the dice or whether it's by prearrangement or whatever, I think that if a character fails, the GM should make it interesting. It's a failure of the GM if there's a major failure that happens and it's boring and banal. And it's just like, well, you fail because you guys suck.
Right.
You know, nobody wants that.
Yeah. The more major the failure, like you said, you know, it needs to be taken seriously, certainly. I mean, this would be like if you're reading, say, a book.
Uh-huh.
If something major failure-wise happens in a book, I mean, it's not just something that's generally glossed over.
Yeah.
It could be a huge, I mean, that could be like a climax of the book. Same kind of thing in your role playing. So for me, failure, I'm cool with it on a small scale generally.
You brought up two kinds of failure that we didn't really deal with in this episode. One was minor failure and one was epic failure. And we didn't really discuss the differences between those two.
For two reasons. With minor failure,
What's the theory behind rolling a one every 1 in 20 times?
Yeah, right? I mean, that's just part of the role-playing game. If you can't handle that, you need a different hobby. Mm-hmm. Find one where you always succeed. I'm not even sure what that is. Looking in the mirror or something.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
We'll get you on an SSRI.
Actually, I don't even know if I succeed every time.
It's about the journey, though.
I suppose
the destination. Yeah, it's about both.
But with the epic failure, the total party kill,
yeah.
I guess I didn't get into it simply because it seemed out of scope of the show.
Well, and
that it's a valid point, but the massive epic mega failure that ends the campaign.
Well, it doesn't have to necessarily end the campaign. And I also want to point out
that once and it didn't.
I also want to point out too that we keep using the example of death and dying.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be that. That's just the extreme example we're using to make the point. There's all sorts of different kinds of failure.
Oh, yeah, it could just be you miss the MacGuffin.
You have a family heirloom sword that you based a lot of your background and character on.
And it broke.
Yeah.
Or got stolen. Or
We did that to Phil. Remember the king character he played?
Tolkien did that.
Yeah, well, the shards of Narsil or whatever.
I like that kind of a thing a lot better. Like I said, we did. We fixated here on death.
Yeah.
And what would be good is
I think people will see this as the death episode.
Well, and I think what will be interesting, I think, is maybe in some of the discussion is to see what people come up with some other examples of failure, of high failure beyond death. Because, there's got to be other things. And I think that would make it.
Yeah, I am actually looking forward to the discussion on this episode of I want to see what people's examples of really cool failures have been and really lame failures. How has failure failed in your games?
Well, to answer your question, I'm not a big fan of contrived failure because I think eventually it's okay sometimes, but I think if you do it too often, it becomes just as bad as any other rut in your game.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
I agree. If John, for example, if your character is going to fail and die in every single game, to me, that's just as bad as the guy that's always playing the sneaky cut burst. I mean, I'd want to see some variety in there. For me, I'm okay with failure provided it is either dramatic or comedic. Assuming once we're not talking about minor failures, everybody misses the shot. We're not even going to mess with that. But significant failure, it's either dramatic or comedic, and the game overall is recoverable.
Mm.
That it has not done something that has either upset a human individual so bad that they're going to disrupt her in the game, or has set the plot so far off course that the campaign, even by the GM's best creativity, is effectively unrecoverable. But if those two things are true, I'm cool with it. And here's why. The type of story that I like the most is the underdog story. I love the story about the ordinary person doing extraordinary things. And along the way, there's great loss. There's great sacrifice. There's all these skin of the teeth, unlikely victories. But in the end, they do win.
Mm-hmm.
They may win a great loss. You know, and Chad, we had this great campaign that we played years ago, where it was four of us. It was you, me, Tim, and Paul took our favorite characters we'd ever played, worked them into the same group, and played them out. We did pass the stick GMing where, you know, we would each take a different turn GMing for
that sounds really stupid.
Five or ten games,
sorry,
or something. It was seriously one of the best campaigns I've ever played in.
I immediately thought of that the motivational poster where it had genre crossing, it had Gargamel and Boss Hog and Skeletor.
This wasn't genre crossing. They were all science fiction characters.
Yeah. All right, that's so a little.
Think of it as a modern day League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I'm thinking of it as like the Flintstones meet the Jetsons.
No. They were all science fiction characters. In fact, they were actually all characters from the same game. Not game as in like campaign, but game as in game system. We just never played them all at once together.
That's slightly less.
So it'd be like.
No, it was a modern day League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
But. When the game was over, mine was the only surviving character. The other three characters had all died in the end of the campaign.
Mine was the guy who started the war, right?
I don't remember all the details, but my point being, at the end of the game, this was a group we had not planned the deaths, but they happened at very dramatic moments. There were big turning points in the plot. In the case of one guy's death, it was a huge turning point in a character's personality.
Yeah.
And when the game ended, it was basically my character sitting alone on the bridge of this warship, just like, we've won this battle, but the universe isn't right. Yeah. You know, this chapter is ended, but the story still goes on, and that's where the campaign ended. And I don't say I loved it because mine was the character that survived. I say it because of the fact
that your character, not, this is going to sound bad, it was sad that your character survived. It was...
He had nothing left.
Yeah, exactly. All of his friends were dead and the world was in chaos.
He was sitting on an empire of ashes.
Yeah.
But they had succeeded at such a terrible price. And the character, through these really neat interactions with one of the other characters, had come to question almost everything he'd ever believed and held dear. It was a fantastic game with a fantastic ending that had a ton of loss and failure. Mm-hmm. But there was still this sense that there's this recoverable plot that goes on. There was some degree of success. Nobody was angry. Nobody walked away in a huff. It was all great. Mm-hmm. So let me close this out on a simple question, which I'll throw out to anyone that wants to answer it. Are there any forms of failure that you just plain will not accept? You just will not let happen in your role-playing games, or do not want to happen in your role-playing games?
And coming to the game naked.
To you, it's a failure?
If Chris Hussey comes to my game naked, that's a failure.
That's an epic win to me.
Four of you, yes, that would be epic failure right there.
Well, failure to you is,
it'd be,
you know,
epic disappointment.
That's rubbing my rhubarb. Anyway.
Pat, what about you? Are there any forms
never
of failure?
Never rub over another man's rhubarb.
I think not. I don't think there's anything that I just wouldn't allow. I mean, like I said, something stupid. Like, I don't want to die in some just stupid way because I rolled a one and I fall backwards and hit a table edge or something like that. Something ridiculously stupid. Or like you said, it's just not really into the context. But now on the flip side, if you die in a glorious way, and it's just because that's just what happened in combat, I'm cool with that. So
that's one thing to me is the pointless dice death.
Exactly. That's what
I walked down the hall.
With that one.
I fail my spot check. I fall into the pit of spikes.
And you're dead.
Yeah. That is it. That is my answer. I reject that reality and replace
unless
it with
your cleric has five resurrections on the horn.
I didn't
you
die.
Have to do the spike pit to win them.
Yeah. I didn't die fighting my evil twin brother. I died just because three kobolds in a roll rolled criticals.
Exactly.
And that's...
Yeah. Sounds like Order of the Stick.
Uh-huh. Totally. Yeah.
And, you know, Kirk, here we are going back to death again.
Yeah.
But I guess, getting away from death, it'd even be things like, okay, you're supposed to meet a contact at this particular date and time.
It's like the GM rolls a random encounter table for the city because you're walking through a city. He rolls up a pickpocket. You fail your spot check, and the heirloom store that you have three pages of background written around and that dates back to X generations of your family gets stolen because you fail your spot check and you never see the sword again, so you might as well rip three pages of your plot.
Or turn it around. This is the sword that you've been on the epic quest for 3 years. You finally get it, and same thing happens. You roll a one on your spot check, somebody lifts it off you, and then boom, you never see it again. 3 years of role-playing down the drain. I would reject that too because it would just piss me off. But again, I mean, you know, that seems kind of random.
All right, we got a loose end here. We're going to tie up next episode plus a loose end.
You're
still
getting
have
big into these two-parter episodes, aren't you?
You know, not intentionally. It just keeps working out that way. But that's good.
It's a paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 100 and some odd episodes in, I'll certainly take too much content over too little.
Remember that time we thought we were out of content at like episode 30?
Yeah,
forever.
I do remember that. So. All right, so you know what? We're going to wrap this one up here, but we will come back next time to do a loose end from this show and the prior show. So thank you guys for listening, and we will catch you then.
Word to your mother.
See you later.
Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Booth, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.